This year marks 100 years since the birth of the remarkable Rosalind Franklin, born on the 25th of July 1920. Her distinguished career in crystallography not only led to understanding the structure of DNA, but also advanced studies on coal and carbon, as well as the structure of viruses. I'm science journalist Izzy Clark, and this centenary series from the Rosalind Franklin Institute will explore Franklin's work, legacy, and in this episode, her life. Rosalind was born in Notting Hill Gate in London to Ellis and Muriel Franklin. She was the second of five children. There was David, who was 15 months older than her. Then her two brothers, Colin and Roland, followed after Rosalind. And then there's her youngest sister.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Glynn, Rosalind's sister, 10 years younger than her. It was quite a big family, I suppose. Arguments happened in the family frequently, but I must explain that argument was a friendly thing, not something hostile in any way. Perhaps one should use the word discussion, but we relished arguments. I think it was probably fairly standard middle-class pre-war family. We had a nanny. My father went to the city every day. My mother didn't work in any job, but she had a lot of social work down in the East End. And later, of course, they were both involved in work for Jewish refugees. But she hadn't been to university herself and always rather regretted it, I think. And so she was determined that her daughters would get education in the same way as her sons. Therefore, Rosalind and I both went to St. Paul's and to Cambridge.
And you're from a Jewish family as well. So was that a key part of your family life as well, growing up, for both you and for Rosalind?
It was for my parents and therefore for us as children. Rosalind went to synagogue dutifully with my parents when small. She gave up religion, I think, as an undergraduate, but she always remained consciously Jewish. And we did have a great many friends in our Notting Hill neighbourhood, a great many relations and friends. I think made really a fairly close, separate community.
Growing up in 5 Pembridge Place in London, Jennifer explained that the whole area was home to a number of family and friends, creating a close community. But they also had grandparents in Buckinghamshire, where many happy weekends and school holidays were spent. It was in Buckinghamshire where Rosalind's lifelong love of walking and exploring began, as captured in one of her letters home.
We're having great fun here. We went to the farm in the morning and head over heeled all the way down the bank. We have got a jar of frog spawn and a newt, which we caught in the bulrush pond. We do not know what to feed him on. Monica, our oldest cousin, says worms and raw meat, but he does not eat much.
This curiosity was an early trait of Rosalind's, as her sister Jennifer explained.
I think she was always rather seriously inclined, and looking back, one can see her as a sort of potential scientist, because she always queried everything, I believe, that her mother told her. She'd never accept any statement without proof, which is very much a scientist's approach. She had an enormous pleasure in developing photographs at my grandparents' house, where there was a dark room where she could play around. Her character is quite clear if one looks back, really, that she had strong feelings, she had strong sense of justice, a good sense of humour, and a sort of persistence and perfectionism, which came through all through her life, really.
What was she like as a sister?
We always got on perfectly well, but there was a very big age gap. She was very much the big sister. I have a letter of hers to my mother advising her on what school I should go to. This was during the war when the school I had been going to packed up. Earliest memory is when I was drawing a picture, and I was about 5, and I was drawing a picture outside, and it had a very nice strip of green at the bottom and a very nice strip of blue at the top. And I remember her explaining to me that if you look, it isn't like that. It looks as if the blue comes down to meet the green. And I remember thinking how silly she was. Of course, there was space in between, but we couldn't agree on that one.
Rosalind's intelligence was noticed at a young age. On holiday with the Franklins, her aunt, Marmee Bentwich, wrote to her husband that Rosalind is alarmingly clever. She spends all her time doing arithmetic for pleasure and invariably gets her sums right. In 1932, at age 12, Rosalind attended St. Paul's Girls' School in London.
At school, she was interested all round. I mean, she was very perfectionist all round, particularly enjoying history, say. And I have a school project on Renaissance Italy, which she did with immense care, but she enjoyed games. She was always a good tennis player, actually. But I think science was always her first interest. She was mathematically inclined. She left just before she was 18, I think, and went to Cambridge when she was just 18. School would have liked her to stay on for another year and probably get a scholarship, but she felt it was time to move on. Went to Cambridge quite young.
And I guess there comes through that, you know, persistent mentality.
Absolutely. She knew what she wanted. She knew what she wanted all through, I think.
Rosalind Franklin attended Newnham College at Cambridge University in 1938, a year before war broke out, to read natural sciences. Along with her studies, the war preparations started to become a part of university life. Franklin wrote that the air raid precaution rehearsals in particular could be somewhat farcical.
One of the dons was standing outside my room waiting to blow a whistle at the given signal. The signal came and the whistle would not blow. However, as everybody expected it, the intermittent squeaks told them what was meant. We then had to assemble at the garden door, dressed with coats, blankets and gas masks, all ready for a grand exit, when Mrs. P, the tutor, discovered she had the wrong key, so we could not get out. Long delay while correct key was found.
With a number of scientific staff interned for war, Jennifer explained that it was a serious time at Cambridge and Rosalind was focused on her studies.
I think people did take life quite seriously, really. People were there, were working hard during the war. There was much less of frivolity of being an undergraduate. And my father was afraid that she should do war work, as my brother David had left Oxford to join the army. But she soon persuaded him, and my mother was on her side, that it was more important to have a chemistry degree and she could do some war work afterwards.
Do you remember visiting her at all at the time?
I can only remember two visits. One was in her first year when I must have been 8 or 9, I suppose, 9 really. And all I can remember of that is seeing ducklings on the backs, which I thought was lovely. But I do remember very much later when she was a research student in Cambridge, I stayed with her for one weekend in her digs. And she'd given a lot of thought to how we would spend the weekend. We saw all the standard Cambridge sights, of course, and we went on the river in a canoe, and we went to see the baker in Newnham stirring a great vat of dough, which was rather an imaginative thing, but it gave me a lot of pleasure. And we went to a film. It was a very good weekend.
It sounds like it, and quite a thoughtful thing to do. But what was she like when it came to her studies? What was she like as a student?
She was hardworking because she wanted a good job afterwards, and she was sure this was her career. And she knew that it was harder for a woman to get good jobs, but she was not someone who was a pioneer and wanting to raise the standard for women, so to speak.
Right. Okay. So the focus was on her work and her science and her career. I mean, I was quite surprised to read that as a student, she felt nervous towards any form of assessment.
Yes. Throughout, exams produced panic in her. She hated it. From when she was at school and thought she was not going to succeed in the school scholarship, of course she did succeed, to, well, anything, getting into Newnham, not failing her exams, as indeed she didn't, whatever it was. She didn't actually get a first in her last year. I think she overworked. She, I think, concentrated on the bits that interested her which is fine, really, in the long run, not fine for examiners who don't like it that way.
In 1942, Rosalind played her part in the war effort, working for the British Coal Utilisation Research Association by producing a PhD thesis on the porosity of coal. After reaching out to a former professor at Cambridge, she then moved to France to continue her efforts.
Well, that was a coal lab also in France, but that's where she learnt the X-ray techniques which were used for the coal research in France.
And she had some very happy years there. So what was it about France that she loved?
She was very happy. That was perhaps the happiest time of her life. She was there for 4 years. She had an immensely scruffy room and practically no money. And she enjoyed the whole atmosphere of the lab for a start, which was a very international lab. And there was no feeling that she was a woman and incompetent. There were a great many women there and everyone treated equally, whatever they were. And she enjoyed cycling by the Seine to work. She enjoyed being able to get out in the country at weekends, which was quite easy. And altogether, it was a happy time.
I've heard that she was quite the explorer when it came to various mountain ranges or whatever opportunity she got.
She was appallingly brave on mountains, yes, in the Alps or wherever. I couldn't possibly have done the things she did.
There are numerous letters home throughout her life where Rosalind excitingly describes the various mountain ranges she had explored on her travels. After 4 happy years in Paris, Rosalind wrote to her parents and assured them that she was returning to London.
It has always been clear to me, and I think I have always made it clear to you, that my one and only reason for returning to London is that the family and perhaps the greater part of my friends are there. It is, of course, an important reason, sufficiently important, in fact, for me to get back to London in spite of my preference for Paris, the French way of life, the mass of French people, and, not a negligible factor, the Parisian climate.
And whilst it was true that Rosalind was deeply loyal to her family and the friends she had made in her childhood, her future career path was also an important factor. In 1951, Rosalind began work at King's College London to work under John Randall and alongside Maurice Wilkins.
Yes, she was asked to investigate certain biological substances for their structure, and then the appointment was changed slightly, asked to investigate in particular DNA, which up to that time had been Wilkins' subject, and he thought that she was coming to help him. She was put in charge, actually, of the investigation during his absence, and he was quite understandably rather irritated by the time he came back. But for some reason, which I've never understood, the letter of appointment, which made it quite clear that Rosalind was going to be in charge of the DNA thing, Wilkins never knew that letter until after the whole business.
And so how did that relationship play out? Did Rosalind ever mention it or talk about it?
Rosalind was very unhappy during those 2 years. The relationship did not play out well, as is fairly well known, I think. She felt very isolated at King's. I have said that argument was a great pleasure in the family. She liked discussion of her work, which she could do in Paris with Vittorio Luzzatti in particular. They would argue and argue for the right thing. She could not do it at King's. The only person she could discuss with at all was her research student, Raymond Gosling. She couldn't argue with Wilkins. He hated argument. And she was not allowed in the men's common room, which is where such things happen on the whole. A lot of discussion goes on in coffee breaks and lunch breaks or whatever, but she wasn't allowed to take part. So it was a personality clash as much as anything else.
And at a similar time, we have the Cambridge University team, James Watson and Francis Crick, who are trying to work out the same thing, this what is the structure of DNA. Rosalind was obviously taking these stunning and important photos, which led to photo 51, yet it was Crick and Watson who published that first paper in Nature of this double helix structure. So what do you know about that situation and its consequences?
Rosalind, I think, never knew that they'd seen that her photograph had been given to them, or she'd have been rather cross. But when she saw what the double helix that they produced, she thought it was wonderful that they'd got there. So there was no bad feeling, I think.
And the situation has changed ever so slightly as time has gone on. This really got cast into the spotlight. And so how has the family felt about everything since?
Things changed very dramatically with Watson's book, I'm afraid, which came out in 1968. Well, it was 10 years after Rosalind's death, and there's been a strong reaction to it. He made such a caricature of Rosalind in it, and people have come to her defense, and her reputation has soared since, really. But my mother was deeply upset, of course, said she would rather Rosalind and her work were forgotten than they would be remembered through Watson's eyes. I don't know that there'd been much until that book, really.
How did the family feel with the announcement of the Nobel Prize?
Ah.
Do you think things would have been different had she been alive at the point that it was awarded?
Oh, well, that's possible. But of course, the Nobel Prize was 4 years after she died. Delighted that the work was acknowledged, and it wasn't much, her part in it. But there was no question of outrage or anything.
Having only spent 2 years at King's, these events have gone down in history. In 1953, Rosalind had moved to Birkbeck University to have her own research team working on the structure of viruses.
Well, to be at Birkbeck, I mean, it was a less grand college, but she had a group of people to work with that she enjoyed, and she could argue with Aaron Klug. They had endless discussions about their work, I think. And they had two, each after a year or so, got two very bright research students working with them. They became a very happy team, I think.
That same Aaron Klug who went on to receive the Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 1982. Rosalind was working on the tobacco mosaic virus, and her group determined the first virus structure. But it was in the autumn of 1956, after experiencing abdomen pains on a trip to America, that Franklin was diagnosed with ovarian cancer.
Yes, she just started work on poliovirus. She was very involved in her work and worked to the last possible moment as much as she could.
And even in her illness, Rosalind still had the odd surprise for her family, like storing polio in a rather unusual place.
It was in our fridge. It was being moved from Birkbeck, which was housed in rather crumbly old buildings, to the School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, I think, or to the Tropical Medicine Hospital. I'm not quite sure which, but just overnight she brought it home. And it was in a thermos, a very carefully wrapped thermos. I remember her saying to my mother, "You'll never guess what's in here. It's got live polio." But I didn't think there was any danger in it.
Rosalind Franklin died on the 16th of April, 1958, aged 37, having achieved so much in such a short amount of time. Jennifer and I ended our chat discussing the impact of Rosalind's work and the importance of the letters she wrote every week to her parents.
We weren't aware of how good she was, no. I think it's probably true. But my mother kept all the letters. And I must say, reading those letters now or recently has made me know Rosalind far more than I think I ever did in her lifetime.
A huge thank you to Jennifer Glynn. Next time, we'll be exploring the scientific work of Rosalind Franklin, but in the meantime, we want to hear from you. How has Rosalind Franklin inspired you or your work? Let us know and email your messages or voice notes to info@rfi.ac.uk, and we may include them in a future episode. I'm Izzy Clark, and this has been a Campus PR production for the Rosalind Franklin Institute.